Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
Okay.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Gobbler Country's Talking Turkey. This is John Schneider, my regular co-host, Brian Manning. How you doing, Brian?
Hey, John, I'm good tonight. Ready to come back and talk some Hokie football.
Yeah, we were going to start off this one real quick because we did not get a chance to do a blitz because I was out of town at a funeral and you were buried and Jay was buried and we just never could get it knitted together. So we're going to do a quick two-people blitz. And I mean, it's going to be 2 minutes, 3 minutes, because what is there to talk about with the game and the crushing, the horrible first half on both sides of the ball and then the crushing disappointment of the second half, where the fourth quarter, the offense didn't show up and the defense completely collapsed. That's, you know, I'm sorry. That's on all the players. It's also on the coaches. That was a poorly planned, poorly executed prevent defense that prevented the Hokies from winning. That's what my take is. What's yours?
Yeah, I mean, you're up 21-3 with, I think it was halfway through the third quarter. I mean, maybe a little more than halfway through the third quarter. I think it's probably 5-6 minutes left. So we were getting toward the end. And when they scored the first touchdown, I just had this feeling. I think we shared it in the group chat where it was like, uh-oh. They scored that first touchdown. You just knew, because I did not have any confidence that we would score again, even though we had scored three touchdowns kind of in a flurry there. I was worried. And what's sad is my worrying came to fruition when they blew the game like that. So, yeah, it's a complete failure, because the first half, the defense was outstanding and the offense was horrible. And in the second half, the special teams and the defense were awful. And I'm going to say the offense had that flurry, but had the offense just been able to sustain some drives, pick up some first downs, I mean, not even score more touchdowns, even just pick up three or four first downs a couple of times, that burns 5-6 minutes off the clock each time. They don't have the chance to score another touchdown.
That's
so,
right.
So, I, you know, the whole second half, I was very frustrated with the whole team in the second half. Even though the third quarter, I was excited. I think we're gonna win this game. It's gonna be even though it's a different, you know, it's not Devin Leary, it's still a good win, but that little quarterback is going to be pretty good. But I mean, we made him look a lot better than he is already, that's for certain. But you know, that was a hard one to take, and it would be harder if the season wasn't already a waste and a disaster. You just got to hope they learn from it and get better. And because we got four games left, I mean, at some point, and I said this in the article last week, at some point fans need to see progress. And progress isn't about, well, oh, this guy made a play this week, he's coming along nicely. Yeah, that is progress, we like that. But what we really need to see is wins. And I don't know what Hokie Nation to deem as would be a successful final quarter. I don't think we're going 4-0 from this. We're looking at this team. I just don't see 4-0 in the cards. But I guess winning two out of our last four would be progress.
Yeah, at this point, even reaching the floor and trying to get three out of it, you know, and we'll talk about it later. My series and the third is coming up on Wednesday, and I'm going through the chart and writing the article now. And it, like I said, it kind of depressed me a little bit as I'm looking at things. Okay, first game out, and this is Georgia Tech. They're here. This is the one we're supposed to be covering this weekend. It's the one we were supposed to walk away with. One of the ones we were supposed to walk away with, no matter what, because Georgia Tech was a mess. It wasn't any good. Their head coach got fired. It was going to be terrible. Well, they still aren't good. I mean, they're still only 3-5, but that's better than our 2-6.
Yeah, Jeff Collins, the dude that always was, I couldn't stand looking at that guy. He always had that vest on. I don't know. There was just something about that dude. But no, if he would have remained coach, I would say we could win. We would win this game like we did the BC game, because that guy does not belong as a head football coach, college football. But when they got the interim coach, I think his name's Brent Key, he came in and he won the first two games like he coached, and they were actually beating good teams. They beat Pittsburgh in Pittsburgh. That's what gave us hope when we played Pittsburgh. Hey, did you see what Georgia Tech did last week? And then they beat Duke. Duke's also in their first year. We've discussed Duke this year about how they're much better under a new head coach, and they're getting the real progress that we feel like we should be seeing. But then they lost two in a row to UVA and Florida State, and UVA is not a good team. Florida State is, I wouldn't call them back yet, but Florida State is slowly becoming good again.
They're becoming relevant.
Yep. So when I look at Georgia Tech now, I don't look at Georgia Tech and say, oh, that's a win. I mean, well, anyway, I mean, that's how we used to look at
it. I have it rated as a 50-50. I have it rated as right now a 50-50. And you have to go with what you have to go with. There are moderate risk and a 50-50.
Don't you miss the days when you looked at the schedule? And I think we talked about this recently, where you could just look at the schedule and go, oh, that's a win, that's a win, that's a win. Well, we can't do that. We literally could do that with Wofford this year. And nobody else.
That was
it. And so,
I know how you feel. Although, you know me, I've always been against that anyway, because every college football team is different every single year. And there's always challenges, especially in the Peloton, especially in the teams in the middle, you know, where maybe the best thing they're going to do is hit 25, 23, 22, maybe get into the top 20, you know, maybe if they're lucky. But in this case, we weren't going to hit it. And one of our opponents coming up just hit 23, and that was Liberty. So we're going to have a tough time. Let's just cover real quick the Georgia Tech offense. And the reason why I say that is because we're kind of accelerating this, because Jay, our buddy, is really busy with stuff that he does for a living. And it's way more important than we do, and in a lot of respects, and he cannot make it. So he's going to be recording the session, you know, his predictions and putting his predictions on. So we're going to be gluing that together. But what we've got is we got Georgia Tech. Georgia Tech's main offense is Jeff Sims. Put it bluntly, he's got a little over 1,000 yards passing, and he's got 417 yards rushing. So he's that's Hassan Hall, their running back. But Sims has got 302 yards rushing. So Sims seems to be a big chunk of their offense, and they've got three running backs they've got two running backs besides Sims who look like they're actually kind of relevant, right? I mean, Dante Smith and Hassan, the aforementioned Hassan Hall. Hall's got 417 yards and Smith's got 257 yards. It's not a real great offense, is it?
When I see Jeff Sims, you look at the numbers, nothing impresses you, but I see a big 6'4" kid with a good arm and athleticism. I think Jeff Sims, with the right coaching, could be a really good quarterback, and he could be very dangerous for our defense on this weekend, because he can do what we always say. He's that dual threat guy. He can beat you with his legs. When I look at the strength of their team, I think their best offensive player is sophomore wide receiver Nate McCollum, who's has 386 receiving yards and 39 receptions. But the thing when I noticed with McCollum, he's only averaging 9.9 yards per reception. So, but I would attribute that to more of a conservative offensive approach than I would that he can't beat you with a big play. So the guy to watch on the outside is EJ Jenkins, who's a 6'7" transfer wide receiver. He has 14 receptions, 16 yards per catch with 3 touchdowns. He, that's a guy that how you're going to cover a 6'7" guy on the outside. But and then you got Malachi Carter, who's averages 16 yards a catch also. But I think that wraps up who they are on offense. They don't scare you with any particular element on offense, but I would say Nate McCollum is probably their best offensive player. But Jeff Sims can be dangerous.
Yeah, I think the dual threat still is perplexing to Virginia Tech and the defense, which we're going to talk about after the break. So let's take a break for a commercial message, and then we're going to talk about the Virginia Tech defense on the backside. And welcome back. Brian, we were talking about their offense. Now we got to talk about kind of the defense and our defense. I was thinking about maybe talking about their defense and then just kind of talking about us. So why don't we talk about their defense for a change? We can just change it up. And the reason why I want to talk about their defense before we launch into us is because we really know we know us, and I want to talk about what we need to cure before we go into predictions. So let's talk about their defense. What's going on with them?
When you look at their defense, what stands out, sir, their linebackers really stand out. They have a guy named Ayende Ely, I think is how you say his first name, but he's a linebacker. He's got 3.5 sacks. He's also got 82 tackles. He leads the team in tackles. He's forced 3 fumbles, so, and he's recovered 2 fumbles. So he's a little bit of a playmaker at the linebacker position. That's a guy to watch out for. He's a 6'3" senior, so he's a big kid. And then they have Charlie Thomas, another linebacker, who is 6'2", but only 207 pounds. He's second on the team in tackles. So that when you look at him, they don't have a team that's going to dominate you up front. The one defensive lineman that to watch out for, I believe, would be Keon White, who is a 6'5", 290-pound senior. He has 4 sacks on the season. He's probably their best defensive lineman. Other than that, I don't know that they're a real daunting unit, although they've played well, especially since Key took over as head coach. It seems like they've played much better. So, and nothing's easy going for our offense. So every defense we face is going to be a challenge. And is that how you see it, John?
I look at their stats and their games, and their defense is probably about as up and down as ours is. They're good sometimes. They hold the line sometimes. And then sometimes they're breaking a little too much, but they're surprising. And that's where I'm kind of concerned with the whole thing is that they're literally surprising. They haven't been doing a lot of turnovers, but neither have we. I mean, that's one of our disappointments in our defense we're going to talk about is we used to be a turnover machine. And now we couldn't buy a turnover with cash.
In looking for reasons for optimism, they are ranked 107th in FBS out of 131 teams in total defense, averaging 424 yards allowed per game. However, you know, that sure, that sounds great if you have a moderately decent offense that's operating at high level. But then when you look around them, West Virginia's 101. What do we do against West Virginia's defense? Nothing. Then you look below them, number 116th, Old Dominion. What do we do against Old Dominion? And then even worse is North Carolina, which is ranked number 122, averaging 463 yards a game. What do we do against North Carolina?
And so, we got pasted by North Carolina's defense.
Yeah,
so
we couldn't even – we made North Carolina's defense look good. And what's incredible about North Carolina, I always love taking shots at North Carolina for whatever reason, but even though they have an amazing quarterback, they do. He's arguably the best one in the country. But their defense is full of 4-star guys, and they're number 122 in total defense. But the game is all about offense. If you can score 40 points a game, you're going to be fine, regardless of how bad your defense actually is.
That's the whole dig. I mean, that's one of Joshua's things. If you don't, you know, this is modern college football, and believe it or not, as boring as the Big 12 is and no defense football, that's what people play nowadays. And if you're just going to outscore the opponent, if you score more points than the opponent does, you win the football game. It doesn't matter how many points you got to get there. If you can do that, it's points per minute of possession. And if you possess the ball 30 minutes and you score 7 points, you probably are going to lose the football game.
I think that's the most disappointing thing when I look at our, when I see our offenses. Some of these teams aren't very good, and they can't recruit because they're at recruit smaller schools or whatever. They can carve out an offense with less talent, which tells you about coaching. And we couldn't find a, we couldn't under the previous regime, and we can under this regime, find a coach who can, I'm not talking about Pry, I'm talking about an offensive coordinator. We can't find somebody who can do a modern offense that people want to see, because people want to watch offense. And at least if you're losing, let us have something more enjoyable to watch other than going scoreless in the first half.
Well, let's talk about that. I mean, it's time, because we need to jump off of Georgia Tech, and we're going to talk about Tech. And yeah, with your takeaways and my good, bad, and ugly, this is Virginia Tech's biggest problem this season. You cannot win football games on defense. That era is gone. I'm sorry, guys, for the old Beamer world purists and everything else, defense only saves you. It doesn't win football games anymore. And it's all about offense.
And something else to remember, it goes to John's point, is we're not going to get any of the top defensive line prospects. Anybody of the top defensive line prospects, because nobody plays defense anyway. So those high quality defensive line prospects are going to end up at Alabama, at Georgia, the teams with the really strong NIL deals. You know, that's just a matter of fact. But that's not saying we can't have good defensive linemen, because we can. We have to develop them. They're not going to come in as a freshman or a redshirt freshman and start dominating. You're not going to have linemen, offensive or defense, generally come in and start for you immediately and make an impact. That's more for skill players or secondary guys or quarterback, even if you find the right guy.
Okay, I'm going to be blunt about this. Our offensive staff, our offensive coaching staff, is frankly lost. I can tell. I'm 63 years old, and I've been in a lot of organizations in my life, and I've done a lot of heavy-duty consulting at a very high level. And it doesn't matter whether it's football or computer science or operations or anything else. When you cannot operate and you cannot adjust and you cannot alter your functions based on the talent you have at hand in order to make things better, you need to have your personnel be put in a position of winning, of being given a chance to win. This offensive coaching staff has no capability at all of putting these kids in a position to win, as far as I can see right now, and that's two-thirds of the way through the season.
And I agree with you. That goes to more than just talent, because look, I've used this example more than one time, and I'm going to keep using this example. Look at the Duke Blue Devils. They go out and hire a defensive head coach, and he's got them playing good ball. He hired a quality offensive coach that's got them. I mean, they were in a shootout with North Carolina. Duke was, with a whole lot less talent than North Carolina, and honestly should have won that game. And they don't have an offensive coordinator they had to pay $5 million to bring to Durham. They have an offensive coordinator who suited his talent to fit his scheme, what they do best, what can we get out of him. That's all we're asking for here. We're not asking for Tyler Bowen to be Kyle Shanahan or Sean McVay. Let's just I'm not completely convinced that we have enough talent on offense. And I'm saying it's not great talent. We have enough talent on offense to move the ball and sustain drives. Tell me we can't do that.
Look, we have enough talent to be a par or just above par team. We have enough talent to at least go to a Booger Bowl. We have enough talent to win some seasons, to win some close games.
To beat ODU.
Yeah, to beat ODU, to beat Pitt when we should have beaten Pitt and we couldn't.
In Miami.
And NC State. Our offense, when you look back at the NC State game, and all they needed to do was drive to a field goal, even get close to a field goal. All I needed to do was possess the ball about 8 to 9 minutes, 10 minutes. And NC State could have never, and then play a tight defense. NC State could have never come back. They just wouldn't have had the time. The coaching errors are starting to pile up, and you're hearing it in the fan base. And some of them might get fixed, but right now I'm hearing a lot of griping about, well, yeah, I hear our big stuff and talk and, oh, we're getting better and, oh, somebody did better and, oh, this did better. And it's like, no, you still lost a football game. You got one guy that performed well. You got two long passes that Wells threw. You didn't give Wells anything else. You didn't give him any other receivers. You didn't give him any other patterns to deal with. He threw those two deep balls, and they were pretty balls. But all the rest of it was dinky-dunking around the line of scrimmage or behind the line of scrimmage to fall-away backs, and sometimes even him running. And I'm going to make this one point. For all the people that were screaming about Malachi Thomas going out and everything, the balloon, the air coming out of the balloon, well, guess what? Malachi Thomas only averaged 2.9 yards a carry. So he was not even a factor in the offense, no matter what.
No, Malachi is a great player, but we could have won that game without Malachi. I mean, you can't tell me without something creative going on offense, which we lack. You can't live on that, that Grant Wells, one Grant Wells deep ball, two Grant Wells deep balls per game and think you're going to win. Like the first drive of the second half, you can tell it looked scripted because they came out and, boy, they just whipped it down the field. They had Daquan Wright involved, and guess what? He never touched the ball again.
Yeah, he got one other target, didn't catch the ball, or it was like over his head. I can't exactly remember. It'd be a while because it's so frustrating. But the patterns, they went back to the wig-wag, and everybody paused and look at the side. What happened as soon? Okay, we know what our main gripe is. We know what the ugly is, and that's the penalties. That's the procedural penalties. That is a dual responsibility. The procedural penalties have to stop for the Georgia Tech game. If they can clean them up, they'll win the football game. But those procedural penalties are murdering this team. And half of the procedural penalties are on the players. Those are unforgivable. You know the snap count. Discipline yourself to forget what's happening. Charlie Wiles was the head coach. It was our line coach for years. One of his specialties was the bob and weave and the defensive lineman popping up and down and shifting sideways and getting the other guy to jump. Why you don't study that and realize the fact that that's who you're facing and that's what he's going to do to you. He's going to have his guys jumping around and distracting you. You got to get your deep offensive linemen to focus in on exactly what they're supposed to do, and that's it. Well, how do you do that? You stop calling plays from the damn sideline. If you want to huddle up, huddle up. Call a play. Snap out of the huddle. Go to the line of scrimmage. Get set. Hike the ball. Go. Stop with this noodling back and forth. Trust your players. I'm not just a team talking about just us. I saw it I watched four other football games this weekend. And I saw the same thing and I saw the same penalties. These coaches don't trust their football players. They are so highly paid and they are so risk averse. They will not trust their football players. And they're calling audibles from the sideline instead of allowing the quarterback and supplying and teaching the quarterback to do his job.
We had 10 false starts in one game. Now you think this is 8 games into the season and we're still talking about double digit penalties per game. You go ahead and I challenge anyone to watch a full season of NFL and college multiple games per weekend. They will never see 10 false starts in one game again this year. That doesn't happen.
And it happened to us. It's ridiculous. And it did it again. And not fixing the problem. It's been a problem the whole time, and it hasn't been fixed yet. That is on coaches. Yes, it's on the players, and they need to accept responsibility. But this is on the coaches, because then you have to start going, what's the problem? Why does this happen? And you got a 330-pound 6 foot, 6 inch tall kid standing on his knuckles for 12, 15 seconds, 20 seconds while you wig-wag plays in from the sideline. He's on his knuckles or he's squatted back and he can't move. I'm sorry. The coaches have got to learn something and they aren't learning. Okay. So that's our offense. Our defense, we'll just keep going with this. Our defense is not as far off as our offense is. Our offense is off the rails and in the dirt. Our defense is close. We finally started to find some people that are actually doing a job. Mansoor Delane was magic again. He led the team, you know, and Alan Tisdale being back on the field, Tizzy led in tackles. And I like seeing linebackers tackling. I get a little nervous when the number two tackler is Mansoor Delane and Mansoor is the cornerback. I don't want to see cornerbacks tackling that much. That means they're too far downfield. They've gotten way too far downfield if your cornerback is coming up to tackle. So, you know, unless you're blitzing or something. Our defense needs to stop being conservative. No more conservative defense, Brent. Quit it. Chris Marr, quit the conservative defense. You have nothing to lose anymore other than maybe winning a couple of football games. Bug nuts blitzes. Drive the quarter. You've got four teams now where you're going to need to drop the quarterback on his butt. You're going to need to double cover guys. You're going to need to stop with the soft, flaky zone and everything else. They're going to have to man up, and you're going to have to start ball hawking again. This team has got to figure out some way of turning the corner and stopping some of these offenses from scoring points, especially late in the game. That's just my opinion. Go for it, and then we'll break our prediction.
I can't say enough good things about Mansoor Delane and Daquan Wright, either one. Those are two of our true freshmen who are killing it this year, and they're getting better every week. And I don't know, I can't really say it's coach, and it's just these kids get it, and they are really good players. Need to see more of it, but the other ones just need opportunities. Maybe that's all they're lacking is opportunities. If the guy ahead of you is not doing anything, then I mean, if our offensive line is going to play like this every week, then let's see some of the younger guys that we got. Why not? What are you going to lose?
Yep. You got nothing to lose. When you're losing everything, you got nothing to lose. All right. We're going to take a break. And Brian, we're going to come back for a little special prediction segment, because we're going to see if maybe Jay is going to record his and send in his separate as a recording separately. So we'll be back after these commercial messages. Hey, welcome back. Okay, it's prediction time, and we're going to do a special segment with Jay before we break out. So let's give Jay a chance to say his piece, and we're going to wait here for a second.
Hello, everyone. It's Jay Johnson. I wasn't able to make it to the Blitz podcast right after the game, nor, unfortunately, was I able to make it to the standard recording that we do for the podcast for the pregame previews. So they've asked me to record a little bit of my thoughts with regards to what happened last week and what we might be facing in the future. So last week was a little bit disappointing, and I know a lot of people were angry. Social media indications showed a lot of ire on the Virginia Tech fan side. But I'd like to remind everybody that we're still continuing to see significant improvement with this team. Certainly 10 offsides penalties is frustrating. Certainly losing a 21-3 lead is frustrating. But the fact that we were even able to be in it against a team like NC State away, I think, is encouraging. When we take a look at how Grant Wells has performed over the last two games, he's had 3 rushing touchdowns, 2 passing touchdowns, and 0 interceptions. You know, there's still continued calls for this quarterback to be replaced, but honestly, the last two games, we're probably not in a position to even be competitive if Grant Wells isn't playing the way he is. So I think perhaps the calls for him to be benched are old at this point. He's dragged the offense kicking and screaming into scoring position several times already just from his sheer effort, honestly. When we take a look at why Virginia Tech lost that 21-3 lead, you really have to lay it at every single facet of the game, right? So after that final score, Virginia Tech gained 13 total yards after their third touchdown. Only 1 first down, and the defense allowed 196 yards to NC State and 3 touchdowns in that same time period. Chance Black fumbled somehow twice on 1 kickoff, but 3 times total. And as far as penalties, we've already mentioned the false start, but they made an additional false start during that time period when the Hokies were on offense, and that turned a 3rd-and-18 into a 3rd-and-23. There was a personal foul on the twice fumbled kickoff return that set Virginia Tech up on their 4-yard line. There was a defensive holding penalty on a different kick return that allowed NC State to start on their 48-yard line, which resulted in a short field and ultimately a touchdown by NC State. And then also a defensive offsides on a 3rd-and-3, which gave NC State a first down. And also, we obviously mentioned the special teams woes. All of that happened after Virginia Tech scored their 3rd touchdown. So with play like that, especially with that young quarterback at NC State coming on, it's understandable why Virginia Tech ended up losing the game. So even though we saw some flashes, right, like Caleb Smith's 85-yard touchdown reception, longest scoring play for Virginia Tech this year and the longest scoring play allowed by NC State this year. NC State's arguably the best defense Virginia Tech played thus far and will play for the remainder of the season, and they still were able to come within 1 point. The other thing that I saw that I liked out there was seeing Daquan Wright. He needs to be on the field more, so I hope that we end up seeing that young man on the field a little bit more. And other bad stuff that potentially is going to affect the rest of the season, Malachi Thomas out in the middle of the 3rd quarter, which was unfortunate. I don't necessarily know if he would have been able to save anything, but certainly, as I've said all season long, having a player of Malachi Thomas's caliber on the field just provides opportunities. So perhaps we're on the field just a little bit longer, or perhaps we're able to convert, because the offensive production after that third touchdown just really put the defense in a very bad situation regularly. Now, when we look forward to the game against Georgia Tech, I think this is where Virginia Tech's going to start having an opportunity to get back in the win column. Thus far, the only surprising result that I've seen this season has been the ODU loss. And I guess I'll say the performance of Miami and how close Virginia Tech came to beating Miami and NC State, which were both games that I thought were going to be a little bit more of a bloodbath for Virginia Tech. So the Hokies have gotten through the hardest stretch of their season, and I think they're going to come out better for it because they've been having to deal with some pretty stiff competition. When we take a look at their performance, their biggest deficit this year came with UNC, right? 31-point deficit, all right, lost that game. Then we get to Pitt, 16-point deficit, lost that game. 6-point deficit to Miami, and then a 1-point deficit to NC State. So even though we haven't seen a losing streak like this since the early Beamer years, the team is improving. And I think Georgia Tech is actually going to be a matchup where the Hokies end up winning. When we take a look at the depth chart, Malachi Thomas is doubtful against Georgia Tech, so we're not expecting to see him. But Keyshawn King should be back in the starting lineup. And we also can expect to see Bryce Duke potentially get some touches because he is now listed on the depth chart behind Keyshawn King for kick returns, and Chance Black has been removed, which is probably for the best. I wish that young man the best, but we can't be fumbling that much that regularly and hope to keep the kick return job. I am a little bit disappointed to see Daquan Wright listed as the number three behind Gallo or DeLulis and number two Blumreich. I think that that freshman's earned the right to be on the field, and I'd like to see that young man get some more touches. So I understand he's listed as third, but hopefully we'll see him a little bit more. And I mean, I guess we can't really talk about Georgia Tech without looking at kind of like the two surprise wins that they earned after firing their head coach, Jeff Collins, in the middle of the season. So right off the bat, they ended up beating Pitt, which was surprising because at the time Pitt was ranked, and I think that was more of an indication of the woes that Pitt was actually about to face because they've been struggling since that loss. In that game, Georgia Tech won the turnover battle. They had three turnovers that they got from Pitt, and they committed zero. That was the deciding factor. Again, a one-score game, so solid work by Georgia Tech's defense. Duke, they won the turnover battle against Duke also, one turnover to zero. But really what they were able to do is slow down Duke's quarterback, Riley Leonard, and they won that game in overtime by a field goal. So two close games against what are considered the more middle-of-the-road decent teams in the Coastal. But, you know, Duke and Pitt aren't like the class of the ACC by any stretch of the imagination. And since those two wins, we've seen Georgia Tech perform in a manner that we would expect, more likely with the talent and the coaching situation they're facing. So they lost to UVA in what can only be described as a pretty ugly game. And what I want to bring up with the UVA and then their following loss against Florida State is that they're really struggling to move the ball on the ground. So against UVA, 56 yards rushing with a 1.5 yard average per carry, and Florida State, 66 yards on the ground, 2.2 yard average. So that's kind of a strength that Virginia Tech had, barring the aberration of the Israel Abanaconda absolute devastation and gashing of the Virginia Tech defense. Virginia Tech has been decent at being able to mitigate the rushing attack of teams. So that's going to play to Virginia Tech's advantage because it's going to force Jeff Sims, the quarterback for Georgia Tech, who's coming off of an injury, to probably have to win this game with his arm, which he's shown the ability to do, but it's not something that Georgia Tech's necessarily particularly good at. I actually think, just like most of the year, you're going to recognize this song, that Georgia Tech's defense is going to represent maybe our biggest problem. So hopefully we're going to see a little bit of the third quarter and fourth quarter Virginia Tech offense a little bit more regularly. And I think they're in a position nicely to do that because they've been dealing with some pretty legitimate defensive squads over the last couple weeks. So in closing, I think the Hokies are actually going to get back to the win column this weekend against Georgia Tech. I don't think it's going to be a particularly attractive game, but I'm going to go ahead and go with the Hokies winning 21-17 at home.
All right. Thanks, Jay. Hopefully everything worked out okay for you. And hopefully your prediction, because we haven't heard it and you haven't cued us in, hopefully your prediction is with ours. Okay. Brian, I just checked the odds. They're early odds. Wednesday is usually the final, you know, the final closer odds. And this is still Monday night. We're recording this and we are a 3.5 point favorite, which is basically home field advantage. And the over and under is 40.5, I think. 40.5. So what are you thinking?
That sounds pretty fair, honestly. And if I was doing the lines, and even though it's hard to pick the Hokies any week right now, I'm going to have them favored for this weekend's game myself. So that sounds right to me.
Yeah, I think the Wise guys are pretty much right on. I think maybe we get a few more points in the future. I don't know. Georgia Tech has lost its running back coach. It's their head coach. I mean, they're starting to fade now. They had a little pride burst there, and they do put up a fight, but they are starting to fade a little bit. I got a feeling that we're talking about, you know, a half score game, you know, 4 points, 3.5 points. So yeah, I think the 3.5 is about right. Maybe we do a little bit better. Maybe Wells cranks up because their defense isn't so good. Maybe Wells gets a shot at cranking off a few more passes like he hit Caleb Smith with. I don't know if Malachi Thomas is back. I seriously doubt he'll be back at all, but I don't think they present a real run defense problem again with us. So we'll probably be able to run the ball some. Of course, making any promises right now with our offense is, you know, you're taking a flyer, aren't you?
Yeah, I don't know how. I've said this before and I'll say it again. We should be able to move the ball against this team, but I mean, we said it before and it didn't come true, so I don't know what to say anymore. But yeah, we should be able to move the ball.
Yeah, so I'm predicting probably, I think that over and under is about right. I don't think either one of these teams has more than 20 points or more than a combination of 40 points in between in them. If it's an over, it's a barely over, you know, like maybe by 5 or something like that. So I'm thinking Virginia Tech probably somewhere in the 24 range and Georgia Tech somewhere in the 17 range.
That sounds fair to me.
So you're going with that too?
Yeah, yeah. I'll have a more definitive prediction later in the week, but I see that as being pretty close to what I'm
thinking.
Like
I said, ish. I might. Okay, don't pin me on it, guys. Because the write-up predictions article for Saturday, it's a 12:30 kick, will probably be, you know, could be a little bit different. I could see, depending on when we see the depth chart come out, maybe we see some changes. I'd like to see, you know, Cole Beck show up in the depth chart for a change. I'd like to see Connor Blumrick used for a change. I would like to see some of the promises that were made at the beginning of the season actually being honored and this last rush to see if we can at least salvage some honor, because that's all these are. These four games are salvaging honor at this point. And if these kids can't rise to the occasion, these coaches can't rise to the occasion, you know, it's going to be a pretty daunting offseason. One of the poll questions in my good, bad, and ugly article, that the answer was not only were the kids going home, but the decommits are going to start. And if this team does not win another game, or if it doesn't do it well at all, and maybe only wins one or two more, I mean, right now we're looking at two more. We're looking at Georgia Tech and UVA, and boy, the UVA game is going to be like 3-6.
But we'll just take it. All we can do is win this one and take it one game at a time, and hopefully we win more than we think right now.
Yeah, so we're going to leave it like that, and let's come back after the game. This time we will be able to get a blitz on done because it is a 12:30 kick, which means we'll be able to queue it up for Saturday evening after the game and everybody sit down and talk about it. Hopefully we get a little smile to talk about. So, Brian, how do we leave everybody?
Go Hokies.
Go Hokies.